I feel like I haven't disciplined little children for a long, long time. My youngest is in her mid-30s now, but I do have all these grandchildren, so I'm watching them do it. And then as a grandmother, they don't want me to discipline their children, and I don't want to discipline their children. But when you're keeping them or when you're engaged with them, you have to be a little more creative in thinking of ways to encourage and do that sort of thing. So I feel like I still am kind of disciplining at times and looking for more creative ways, like taking things away or logical consequences, or, we kind of have a deal that have had a deal for all these years that if they blatantly disobey, then when they get home, they will administer the discipline. So I can say to the child, this is out of line, and so if you're going to continue this, then we're going to have to talk to your parents about it, and there will be a consequence. And so then they understand that. It only takes once or twice with one child, and then everybody kind of gets on board and goes, okay, so we still have to act right. But we can do a lot more fun things too. But anyway, I don't know why I got on that rabbit trail. But the goal of our conversation today really is to help. We want to help and encourage you more than anything. I feel like we want to be somewhat directive, but at the same time, very supportive. So I hope you leave here feeling encouraged and feeling heard and that sort of thing. We can talk about discipline from so many different angles, but we're going to start by telling you that you were chosen by God to be the parents of the children that He's given you. He picked you because you're the very best mother for those children. And they were specifically designed to have you as their mother, with your strengths, with your weaknesses, with your sinful patterns and their sinful patterns that rub up against each other. But you were picked for them. And they are so blessed to have you as their mother. It makes me emotional. but you are. And we're just going to be talking about 0 to 6 primarily, because that's what we were asked to do. But we can talk about whatever, because we've kind of done it all. But anyway, so I have several thoughts that I just wanted to kind of throw out first. One, I thought Caleb's illustration at the beginning of his sermon last week, and I don't know how many of you heard that sermon, but he talked about how his girls, they kind of made the decision that they weren't going to make a big deal out of Disney princesses, and now the twins are turning 5, and they want Elsa at their party. So, I mean, they wear princess dresses all the time, and just the environment around them is what kind of gave them this love for the princesses. And what it made me start thinking about is, what is in my environment that is influencing me for positive or for negative? And what is in the environment of your children? You're creating an environment for them to grow up in. And so just thinking about that, thinking of the influences on your child, the people that are around them, how they're spending their time during the day, media, music, your influence on them. And those are big things with a child, with these little children. And these first 6 years are primary years for the building of security and safety and all of those things. Anyway, so, and then secondly, these years are hard. Don't you feel like you're piddled and spilled and whined to death some days? They're hard. And these children are 100% focused on what they need and want and desire and how they feel in this very moment. And it's with a baby, I just always, one of the things I love to watch is they'll be sitting there just kind of happy, and then all of a sudden their little lip pops out and they're sad, and then you look at them and then they grin, and that's kind of what you got. It's kind of like this moment, how do I feel? What do I want? What do I need? And you're the one trying to manage that. And that can be hard when you're trying to get things done and and manage that. So just acknowledging that. And then your role is to offer clear direction and instruction, to put boundaries around them, to somewhat control the environment so that influences negatively are not coming in, to love, to encourage, to try to anticipate what's coming. I know I always said to my kids when we were getting ready to go somewhere, okay, everybody go to the bathroom, but I don't have to. I don't care. Go try. You know, that was just one of my things, was go to the bathroom, because I just didn't want to be 5 minutes down the road and somebody go, I got to go to the bathroom. No, you didn't get to do that. So, but not just to react, but to be intentional and to try to get ahead of things. And then none of this can be done in your own strength. I have a cheat sheet of Bible verses. If you're trying to do it and plug through and do it, it's going to be hard. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. And know that. Know that he's your refuge, your fortress, your strength, your provider. He's a good God, and he knows all your struggles. And he came down here and had more struggles. So he understands, and he wants you to come to him in your hard times, to cry out. Days are long, the years are short. You hear that all the time from old people like me. Oh, treasure these days. They're going to be gone soon. And I'm going to say it because it's true. But the days are so, so long some days. And I want to walk with you through that. Very important to try to see something you can laugh at or appreciate each day. Just look for it. Because if we're looking for blessings, then sometimes the harder things minimize a little bit. So look for those blessings that you can get through the day. And then a quiet time is really good for you. A time with the Lord, that should be very high priority. But it's also good for your children. It teaches them, be still and know that I am God. Be still. So once the nap times are over, it's okay to have a time in your room where everybody just, and you get some time too. So don't feel guilty about that. That's a priority, and really you're doing what's best, not what's not best. And now to Emily, the real expert.
Not true, but I'll add, I feel the same inadequacy because our oldest is about to be 17 and our baby is 8. So I have done 0 to 8 6 times, but it's been a long time since I had a 2-year-old. And so just know your people here. We're not in the trenches doing this every day, but we have survived it. So that's good news, right? We want to give you guys just a minute. The idea here was to open kind of with some big picture ideas. So we want to give you a second at your tables to just think and talk, because it does help if you think through kind of some of those big picture ideas, which I see all these squishy little babies. Ugh. And I know it's really hard to look at this like tiny thing and think, well, what do I want you to be like when you're 6? I don't know. What do I want you to be like tonight? I want you to be asleep. That's where we're at. But if we can just kind of think, what are the character qualities you're hoping to kind of instill in your kid? What are the habits, the responsibilities? You know, do you want your 3-year-old to be able to put on their own shoes or buckle their own car seat? That doesn't just happen. So take a minute at your tables. A couple just big picture ideas, throw them out. What are you hoping for your kiddos that you can kind of instill and engage in them from 0 to 6 that sets them up for success as they move into those school years? Does that make sense? All right, so take a minute.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Does anyone have thoughts they're willing to share or something they just want to throw out there? Ideas? Yeah, we have a liar who drank toothpaste. And I would get in her face and I'd say, did you drink your toothpaste? And she'd say, no. And it would be like strawberry. And I'd say, oh, I think you're lying. How did you know? She'd have it all over her face. Yeah, the lying, that's a really important thing to address too when they're younger, because you can see how that one's going to take them and you to a really hard place. So we can talk more specifically about that. But anyone else have anything else? Truthfulness, definitely in those early years. Integrity.
Mine was like cultivating a relationship among siblings so that they grow up to be. I mean, I know they're going to fight, but like.
All the praise hands. Mm-hmm. Yes. And maybe Suzanne can address that later, because but for the grace of God, I don't know how that happens. But in our family, that really was something that has happened. It has been a product. I love my siblings. We love each other. We want to be together.
It's pretty
and
cool.
It's really cool. And I feel the same way about my kids. We do a lot of sitting toe to toe and saying encouraging things when we've torn each other down. And I mean, just that culture of, it's just not going to be okay for you to be unkind here. She used to say, and I say, if you can't get along with the people here, you're not going to get along with anybody, because you're not going to see anybody. You're going to stay here until you can do here well, and then we'll go out. But that's a great one. Anyone else? Something you'd love to see or cultivate?
I share confidence and independence. I was talking about how I taught kindergarten, and it's crazy the emotions that happen the first few weeks, and really the whole year, but that was something that I noticed really early on. I was like, wow, when I'm a mom, I really want my kid to walk in with, like, his head held high, like, I can do this, this is okay, even in, like, preschool and stuff, too, because those emotions are crazy, and
yes,
they don't always know how to process what they're feeling, and they can't communicate that to you. So being able to foster that early on and talk about that and just have that set up for success for that first day of, like, being gone and being in school. Because you can tell the kids that have been set up, and you can tell the kids that have not. And it's a big difference.
That's a great point. And you wouldn't think you have to teach your kid to put their head up and say, I can do this. But when you start to realize all the things you actually have to teach them, don't think too hard about that, because it really is a lot. So one of the things we want to talk about is just kind of what this looks like, kind of if we're coming in just a little bit, how are you as moms working to discern what behaviors are truly discipline issues from what's just childish behavior? So if your kid is 2 and they're dropping food off their tray at the table, that is just childish behavior. It may at some point need to be addressed as a discipline or heart issue, but it's also just an opportunity to train your kid. Again, think through the list of things they have to learn to do. So some of what you're doing in discipline is just helping your kid understand what are the expectations of them. Discipline at the heart is really about figuring out those things like lying, those character issues, kindness to siblings. And using words like kindness instead of be nice, God doesn't tell us to be nice. He tells us to be kind, because you can be nice when you feel it, but it's hard to be nice when you don't. You can be kind even when you feel angry or you're upset with a sibling or your parent. And really this may not be popular, but this starts with knowing yourself and knowing your own sin bend and knowing where and how you need to see the Lord work in your own heart in order to address that with your kids. I'm very different from some of my siblings. So some of the issues that I have with my kids are going to hit on my sin. I like order. I like for things to kind of have a rhythm to them and be pretty well established. So when I walk in and our home is in chaos, it sends me into chaos. I have siblings who could care less. They walk in, they're like, I don't even see the chaos. So for me, just recognizing, am I really angry at my child? Or is this really something that needs to be addressed to my child? Or is this me? Because if I walk in and I'm screaming, pick up your shoes, get your stuff, why'd you leave everything out there? That's probably more about me and my heart issues than it is about my kids. If you haven't dug into some of these things, I have some resources. I brought some of my favorite books with me. But Emotionally Healthy Spirituality is a great book that will help you dig in and ask that question. Have I really thought about what happened in my family growing up? Have I really addressed some of the wounds and some of the hard things that have happened in my own heart and in my own life? And again, some of them are just a product of my own sin. Counterfeit Gods by Tim Keller is a great one. If you're wondering, like, why does this particular thing always make me feel angry or sad? This is a great book for kind of tracing those sin patterns down to the root. Like, oh, maybe I have pride issues. Perhaps I should address that with the Lord and not let that sin spill out over onto my children. Because ultimately, your sin patterns are going to be the most affecting your children and your spouse. I have thought several times, and the Lord and I are going to have a conversation about this, because I'm like, Jesus, you never had kids. Like, I know you had disciples. I know that you had suffered on the cross, but you didn't have children. I know you understand what I'm going through, but also, do you really understand what I'm going through? And I love this book by Dan Allender, How Children Raise Parents, because essentially the heartbeat of it is that your kids primarily are going to reveal the sin in your own heart. And most of what is going to happen as you're parenting, yes, you're going to raise these people, hopefully well, but ultimately it's your own heart that's going to be refined. And this is probably my favorite parenting book ever, in that vein. So we also, and he says in this book, this is that your kids are asking two questions. Okay, they're asking, can I get my own way? And they're asking, am I loved? So can I get my own way speaks to justice. It speaks to strength. It speaks to boundaries, right? And ideally, we're telling them, no, precious one, you cannot get your own way. Am I loved? Is there tenderness? Is there mercy here? Is there delight in me and in who I am? And again, ideally, we're telling them, yes, you are loved. You are precious. I delight in who you are. But you do not get to decide how your world is ordered. And I don't really get to decide how your world is ordered either, because ultimately, God is the one who is deciding how our world gets ordered. And he put me in between you and him for a few years so that you can understand authority and you can understand God's authority over you. Unfortunately, I think in a lot of churches and in a lot of Christian homes, the answer becomes, no, you can't get your own way. And no, you're actually not loved because you're sinful and you're doing this wrong. And that delight sometimes just naturally falls away because we are exhausted, right? We're being piddled to death.
Piddled and spilled and wine to death. That's a good one.
Or just touched beyond what we want to be touched. So I think it's really a challenge for us, especially as Christian parents, that we're not just presenting our kids with a list of rules and a list of things. If you do these things, then you are loved and you are accepted and you cannot have your own way. And we forget that kind of tenderness and mercy and delight. And really, ultimately, that just comes from knowing your kids and really, really studying them and delighting them. I was so convicted when we lived in Nashville. So I was pregnant with our fifth at the time, and I read Kisses from Katie, who was a young woman. She went down to Africa, and she ended up with 11 children that she had adopted at 21. And now I think they've got 13 or 14 or 16. She's married. She's much older. And she starts that book with an assessment of each of her children and something she loves about them. She calls out the glory that she sees in them. And y'all, I was so convicted. I mean, I was exhausted. Our oldest was six. I'm pregnant with our fifth. We had moved for like the seventh time in our recent history. And I'm thinking, if someone asked me to name something delightful about each of my kids, could I do it? Yes. I would have to think probably really hard. I recognized that it wasn't my bend to sit down and look at them and say, you are glorious in this way. And it really shifted my perspective to know them well, but also to delight in them and to call out those things. We think them a lot, right? You know, you see your kid do something, you just think, oh, you are so delightful. But actually getting it out when you've got another one screaming at you or peeing on you or whatever it is sometimes tricky. So that beauty of really studying them and calling out the delight that we see. The other thing that Dan Allender talks a lot about is that to love your kids is to repent of your own lust to them. And essentially, that is the definition of biblical love. So when you blow it, which you will, not only when they're two, you will when they're 12, you will when they're probably 25, I don't even know, we'll get there. So when and how are you engaging them in that process to say, ooh, mommy blew it. And let me talk to you about why the fact that I just treated you the way I treated you is not okay. And it's actually not about you. That was about my own sin. And I am so sorry. And I'm apologizing to the Lord, but I'm also apologizing to you. And I'm so thankful that we have God's forgiveness for that. So drawing your kids into that process. I'm reading a book now about teenagers. And she says that she's like, repentance, repentance, repentance. I'm like, it hasn't changed. You're going to need that. And that is how your kids are going to measure that you love them, by engaging them in humility and engaging them in your weakness. Otherwise, they're probably not going to think they need Jesus all that much if they don't see you needing him. So how can you demonstrate your own need to them in a way that draws them into that need as well? Did you have any response to that before the next question?
Yeah, I do have a couple of things. One, when you said that about being a product of your own sins, you know, different things, I always found it so challenging because I know what I said, but I don't know what she heard, you know, because she's interpreting not only what I said, but how I said it and how she's feeling and what she's needing. And so it felt pretty heavy to me in parenting that I knew what I meant and I knew, but I didn't ever know what they heard. And so trying to learn their natural bends, their sin patterns, their giftings, you know, you talked about wanting your child to be confident. Some kids, I got one grandchild that is his father, his mother says about him that he has more confidence than he really should. And his son is the same way. I mean, that kid is like, I am the coolest kid in town. And then I've got others that really are that cool, but they don't have a clue about it because of just the way that they're created. But as a mom, you can continue to feed, to tell them, you got this. You know, we can do all we can do. But some of us just are naturally confident, and others of us just beat ourselves to a bloody mess over our weaknesses. So, but I would encourage you to give it your best shot because you do want them to go incompetent. Anyway, and then just talking about loving our kids. Loving does include boundaries, and I'm going to get on to discipline a little bit, but loving does include boundaries. Children feel safer when they know they're loved enough. I mean, look at what God does for us. He gave the Ten Commandments. He spent chapter upon chapter in the Old Testament giving them specific ways that they should act so that not so that he could control them, but so that their life would be rich and full. And the New Testament is full of promises, but also of directives, of ways that we are supposed to bend our knee in submission to God and live a life of obedience. We're supposed to obey. And so teaching your children to obey you, like she said, also teaches them to obey God. And so I just felt like that needed to be said.
Great.
Okay.
So we want you guys to take another minute to discuss, what do you think that what we want to address next are the more specifics of discipline. We're going to get into kind of the nuts and bolts for you guys. But what do you think is your biggest challenge right now with discipline or even with a specific child? I love the illustration about lying or something like that. You know, maybe this is just confession. I don't know. Someone beside you go, amen, sister. But where is it that you feel like you need the most kind of practical, tangible help or, you know, just Jesus help me with this child. I don't even know. So talk about that for a minute at your tables.
So we'd love to hear some of the things y'all said. Anybody want to share? Go.
So I have my oldest is he'll be 3 in March.
Uh-huh.
And he's in this phase where he's pushing the boundaries, and when I ask him something, I'd rather him do it the first time than the second or third.
Uh-huh.
And not get to like the fifth time and then I'm gonna count to 3, like what else can I do?
Well, we're gonna get to that.
We'll get there.
We are gonna get to there, but that's an excellent question. Anybody else have something? Yeah.
We were just talking about one, like I was saying, my oldest is a really well behaved, she's a people pleaser, just very easygoing, and I find that when she does get out of line, I come down too hard because I know my expectation. Mm-hmm. Or even when I'm struggling with my 3-year-old or my 1-year-old, I almost expect my oldest to see that I'm struggling and to like not add. She's not allowed to have her own thing, and so I see myself doing it, and I don't really know how to stop doing that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I also want her to be able to just be 5. And, mm-hmm. And then the other thing, when I'm getting onto them about something or talking through something they shouldn't have done, and just getting a blank stare. Mm-hmm. And so then I keep going. I find myself shaming them because I want some response. Mm-hmm. And then I've gone overboard and made a huge deal out of something that really wasn't, just because of mm-hmm. their lack of response. Really.
Mm-hmm. Those are my things. Okay. Are we going to address? I would say in that one, I would, when you feel yourself over talking, because I'm an over talker, stop and ask them a question. You know, try to engage them, bring them into it rather than you telling and directing, but let them own it. You know what I'm saying?
It's still just kind of a, I don't know, it's just, I think my issue more is just having expectations from the discipline, like, mm-hmm. or not even discipline, but just talk. Like, I expect
repentance and, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. And yeah, that's what we want. But sometimes it takes a while for them to get there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, nobody likes to have their sin called out. They're wrong called right. out. I mean, I don't particularly love it when my husband says to me, well, you shouldn't have done that. You know, it's like, well, I don't really like it. I kind of bow up a little bit. Well, wait a minute. You know, but he's speaking truth. And our children are the same way. They want to go their own way. Mm-hmm. And you're redirecting. And I'm not a big fan of that. Yeah. So, you know, is there anything else we need to? Okay. Well, I think we'll address the other things that I've made notes and stuff, so I think we'll get to it. One other thing that Emily was talking about, when you're looking for what to discipline for, other than, there's childish irresponsibility and then there's disobedience. We always looked at from the D's. We had 4 D's that we kind of said these are the disciplinary things that we do. One was defiance. Direct defiance always elicited some sort of response. Just disobeying, dishonesty, and disrespect. And I would almost highlight disrespect, as all of those are important, obviously. But respect is something that we're losing in our culture. It's okay to bash anybody anytime for anything. If you don't agree with them, if you don't like it, you can say whatever you want on social media. You can bash, and it's totally okay. And it's not okay. We are told to respect and live in submission to God. Your kids need to be taught to live in submission and obedience to you. But also, there's other authorities that we need to respect in our culture. And so teaching respect, that was my husband's hot button. He didn't let our kids, she can attest, you didn't sass. If you did, he was on you like white on rice. I mean, he did not care for that. Mm-hmm. And that was just his thing. And he said, we're not going to talk ugly to the children. They're not going to talk ugly to us. And they're not going to talk ugly to each other. And that was day one. And pretty much held to that. If I get sassy, he's not a fan. So I just want to talk about the first type of discipline. There's really 2 types. One is corrective, and she's going to talk a little bit more about that. But I want to talk about the training, because Proverbs 22:6 says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. That is not a promise. That is a warning. That basically says, if you don't train up your children in the way they should go, if you don't teach them and train them, then when they are old, they will go their own way. And so you got a great opportunity here to train up these little people in the way they should go, to teach them your faith, to teach them that they're little boys and little girls, to teach them all the good things of God and do all that. You know, Randy, when he does the discipleship, when he did, the discipleship thing, he talked about the four steps to building a disciple. He said most churches just direct and then expect, and then delegate. They tell you what to do and expect you to go do it. But there's other steps in the middle, and I really think this applies so well to discipline. The first is to direct, to speak what you want done, but then to coach, and then to support. So you coach them first, and then you support them doing it. You may have to do it over and over and over, and then you delegate. Once they've learned the process, you know, what they're supposed to do, once they've learned how to do it, then you can delegate it to them. But you're going to have to teach them. I have a friend whose son was in high school before. He came downstairs every morning, and she'd say, "Did you brush your teeth?" And he'd go, "Oh." And he'd go back upstairs and brush his teeth. He was in high school before he answered that question, yes. I mean, so it's repetition, and it gets old. But you've got to stay with it to really teach and train them. Start small with simple commands. I have one friend who would teach her kids to stop. They would take them out in a big yard, and they'd run and run and run. And then they'd say, "Stop," and they'd stop. You know, and then they say, "Go," and they go. Because you do need to teach your children commands that are for their safety. You know, you've got to teach them to stop when they're about to run out in the road, that you can say stop. Or danger, that's dangerous. You don't want them running into a fire or running out into a parking lot. So teaching those things by playing games is a really good, simple command. Let's see if I can read this. Eliminate as many no's as you can. That was taught to me by my mother-in-law early on. She just said, try not to have a lot of no's where you're always saying, don't touch that, don't do this, because you got to take them out in public and you're going to have to teach them. But have a few no's that are just absolute. I mean, obviously one is the sockets in your house. Those are a no. But teach them with just a few things. And get rid of everything else. Move all those pretty breakable trinkets that you've got. Put your plastics in the bottom and pots and pans that they can pull out and play with. And you're not always saying, nope, don't do that. No, or lock up the cabinets that you don't want them in. But try to create, we put gates at the bottom of the stairs. And so the stairs were not ever a no because there was a gate there. They couldn't use it. But when we got on the stairs, then they could do it. It was a yes because we were there with them. And so just little common sense things like that are helpful. You have to correct and direct, but other good things that connect you to your kids. I just brainstormed some ideas. Positive words, lots of I love yous, lots and lots of verbal affirmations. I've heard it said you should say one no to every five yeses, but yeah, who knows? Speaking positively to them. When you see them doing something well, verbalizing. I'm an over-communicator, so it's easy for me. You introverts, sorry. But try to put words to things. Try to put words to emotions when they're, you know they're sad or you know they're angry. Try to say, looks like you're feeling a little bit angry. What are you feeling right now? Try to get to the feelings. Listen, make eye contact, a lot of repetition, a lot of physical touch, the gift of time. I know we're all busy and we all have a lot going on, but there's a lot of things pulling on your time, your phones, your, things coming at you. So try to make some time just to be there with them. I used to try, I don't know if you would even remember this, but when they came home from school, I used to try to just sit down and just make myself physically present. I wasn't necessarily, because if I'm in the kitchen doing stuff and they could get a snack, and I just would try to just be there. If they wanted to talk, great. If they didn't, that was fine. But just try to do little things that give time or give that. Try to eliminate some of your distractions at different times so that they have, I've heard, and I don't know that this, I don't have documentation, but with babies, they're showing now that, you know, how you get involved in a conversation with a little baby and you're having that conversation, when you break that a lot, like to look at your phone and check something and they go back, it really is having an impact on their brains. They're seeing studies now. So think in terms of giving them a little bit of time where your phone's not around or where you're not, you know, trying to do something else. Let's see where I am.
I'll just add the opposite of that is true too. If your baby is communicating that they need some time or some space and you don't give it to them, that's a negative for them too.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really cool and frightening.
That's interesting. I've never known a baby to communicate they need time and space because I'm an over-communicator. But role playing, singing. We used to sing in the car. We'd put on songs and we'd have big singing times. A lot of these kids do fun things like dance parties and have music. And I wasn't very good at that. include them in fun. Include them in chores. If you're unloading the dishwasher, they can learn to put all the spoons away or, you know, find the spoons and put them away for you. Just however you can have them work alongside you. That's one thing that really builds confidence, is them accomplishing a little task. And when they're three, they like to do it. When they're older, not so much. And take them on errands with you. Teach them how to behave. Teach them how to sit at the dinner table and eat dinner. You know, just things like that. More is caught than taught. And this is not meant to put heavy weight on you or anything, but leading by example. If you want your kids to drive the speed limit when they're 16, they're watching you. This one used to sit there, had a digital speedometer, and it'd be, you know, the speed limit would be 35. She'd go, "You're going 37. Speed limit's 35. She's a rule follower. So, and I'd be like, "Oh, I hate this digital." You know, but things like that, they do learn. They are catching it. They are watching you. They're seeing things like that. One of our goals, Brad and I used to talk about this a lot, was we really wanted to be the same people when our door was closed as we were when our door was open. We didn't want our kids to see us showing up at church like, we're the perfect little family, and we're not. And, you know, we wanted to be open, and you don't want to air all your dirty laundry, let's be honest, but we definitely wanted to do that. And kids do pick up on that. They pick up on hypocrisy. They pick up when you're harder on them in front of certain friends because you're trying to gain their approval. And we had a situation like that in our family with a cousin where the mom just came down on him. And the kid was like, "What is going on?" He had never been disciplined like that before, but everybody was there and she was embarrassed and he was acting out and it was terrible. And it still caused problems to this day with her because that was just hard. But so let your children see you being the same. And it's okay to be different than your friends. It's okay to be more relaxed. Like Emily said, our kids are so different. Some of them, they live in complete and utter chaos, and they are totally fine with it. They are just, the kids just running. Oh my gosh. Because I'm more like Emily. And they're great with it. And they're the right parents for those kids because those kids are flourishing. And so there's not a right and a wrong. It's okay to be different. But you want to lead by example, teaching them, letting them see consistency in your life, pursuing your quiet time, honor and respecting authority, taking ownership of your actions as well as letting them take ownership of theirs. Delaying gratification. There's a couple of really funny things on the internet right now of these kids that, you know, the parents leave them and they're these twins. That's the funniest one. I wish I could have shown it. But delayed gratification is a great one to teach. Teaching them to apologize and to repent because they see you doing it is really good. Be a student of your child. Each child is unique. And it's like Emily said too, you know, you want to kind of learn their bend and their need because different kids have different needs. My mother-in-law talks about one of her kids needed to sit after dinner every night for about 10 minutes, just sit in her lap. She needed that physical touch. And so they would sit down after dinner and she would just hold her and the other kids would get up from the table and go. And so just learning those things that kind of fill the tank of the child. And also trying to look behind the behavior. Sometimes the behaviors getting on your last nerve so bad that you miss what's going on behind. You know, you see in certain kids, you see a deeper need for affirmation. And so you can't always fill that tank, but looking for ways that fill their tank and maybe what the why of why they're misbehaving. And then Ephesians 6:4 says, where is that little verse? It says, "Fathers, don't provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." And things that would provoke your children to anger are being too harsh, maybe being too lenient in areas. I know for us, one of our favorite parenting verses was, "Let your yes be yes and your no be no." When you say no, don't teach them that if you say, they have to go through four or five no's before they finally wear you down for you to turn around and say yes. Mm-hmm. Because once they learn that, they're on it every time. So you want to draw the line, make it clear. But that requires getting engaged, not just saying, "Don't do that," and turning back around. So, again, that's a little heavy, but those kinds of things. Also, not enough time with them. Sometimes they're just needing to be with you. Let's see. Always point your children to your authority, because they learn to obey God by obeying you, and using Scripture to teach them that God is your authority. So what are we doing next? You're talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so what do you do? Like, what are you going to do? You've got the kid who's saying, you know, "Can you do this, fifth, sixth, eighth time, don't make me count, I'm going to count to five, I'm going to count to 10, I'm going to count to 12. What is it? So what are the practical things that you can do? And first I'm going to say, and this is the hardest thing, is that every kid in every situation requires something different. So I've got six kids. That means I have an infinite combination of what I need to be doing with them at any time. And so that's where kind of knowing them and knowing the situation really does help. But even then, you're going to feel like paralyzed sometimes, because it's like, well, what do I do? What worked for, you know, the very self-motivated, self-righteous older brother, which was me, isn't going to work for the prodigal. It's just not. So being aware that, like, there is no right answer. It's all gray. 100% of it, really and truly. And you're going to have to just face to the carpet, like, "Lord, please help me survive this child and do this in the way that you would call me to do it." So that's your first bit of encouragement. All right. So what is the goal of discipline? I think it's important, and I think we miss this. And I'll just begin with a little bit of confession. Some of my absolute worst parenting moments came in moments of hurry, when I just wanted to get it done, or we needed to go out the door, or someone's throwing up in the hallway, whatever it is. And so whatever you can do to kind of like slow that down. I'm a people pleaser and I hate to be late. So nothing gets me in a tizzy like being late. And that is just a recipe for all kinds of problems with my children and my own heart. So again, that's knowing yourself and knowing, you know, is being on time right now going to be more important than actually addressing this, what could potentially be a major heart issue. The goal of discipline, though, the goal is always reconciliation and restoration. Okay. It's not a punishment. It's not a consequence. It's not, you know, even necessarily a change in behavior. It is helping your child understand what happened and bringing that relationship back to a circle or a whole. Okay. So we'll start with spanking, which I recognize there's a good chance not a single one of you spanks. And there's no judgment from me if you don't, or you do, that's fine. I do think it's biblical. I do think God's word is there, but I also think that it is misused overwhelmingly. So spanking is not hitting your child. Spanking should never be done with your hand. It should never be done when you're angry. And it is not quick. It is never going to be a quick process. So for us, we still have them. We call them the brown chairs. They're in our room. The kids went to the brown chair. That was where we engaged with spanking. The child always needs to be calm. So you're not spanking a kid that is flailing and screaming and having a meltdown. You've missed a step. So got to be calm. And there needs to be some submission. we always asked our kids to lay over our lap. And if they were not able to do that, the spanking didn't happen. All right. So you're not angry. It's not quick. And it's not the end. So the spanking is like step two, right? You ask them, or maybe three, if they need some time to calm down. So there's the spanking, then there's a conversation, then there's prayer, there's repentance. Y'all don't know how many times I apologize to my own kids after a spanking. Like, you needed a spanking, but I'm sorry I was angry. Or I didn't handle that well, even though there was something here that needed to be addressed. Sometimes I had to go apologize to another kid because I'm screaming at another kid, get out of here. Go get out of here. I'm trying to deal with this kid. You leave me alone. Whatever it is, there's almost always an apology, even for me. So if you do choose to engage in spanking, just know, I see a lot of moms. They're like, that kid just needs a good whack. Get out there and play. That's not a spanking. So just understand if you call it that, I would disagree with your definition. So I just want to be sure my definition for you guys is clear. The other thing I know that we use a lot of is timeout. And when I was a young mom, we lived in Oklahoma, and I was part of a MOPS group, and we had a child psychologist who was not even a believer come and talk to us about timeout. And it was the most unbelievable thing I've ever heard, and totally groundbreaking. Basically, what she said is timeout is not discipline, which I was like, what? Everybody uses it for discipline. But essentially, when your child is in a tizzy, right? When they're having a meltdown or just overwhelmed, they are on fire, okay? They are literally emotionally on fire, and they need to not be on fire before you can address them. So a timeout, the goal of a timeout is to help the child come back to baseline, which means it's really not a great tool for kids that are 2 to 4. She recommended you not even really begin timeout as part of your discipline until the kids are 5. All right, so great. Thanks, Emily. You've just totally ruined one of my tools. We did utilize timeout, but the key is for it to be in a place where the child doesn't have things they can engage. A timeout in your room where all your toys are is just playtime, okay? So it needs to be in a place that is unappealing, where there are not objects or items they can play with or use to distract themselves. The brown chair was also our timeout chair. And actually, we were in a rental house, and when we moved, I found like a penny wedged in the side of the chair. I thought, that's weird. And then I moved the chair away from the wall, and there was an entire mural. A mural behind the top. The top of the chair was like this. And the kid had been moving the chair and etching a drawing. One kid, it was our family, there was a house, it was a whole thing behind the chair I never knew existed. It cracked me up. So they'll find something to do. I mean, she found a penny somewhere and that was all she needed. But it should be a place where they can simply come back to baseline. And what she said is, I'm not going to remember the exact question, but when you do a timeout, most of the time it's too short. Okay, so again, the goal is to bring the kids back to baseline, and they need to be calm or still for at least 30 seconds or a minute before you even go in there. If they're saying, I'm done, I'll come do what you ask, just let me get out, I'm done, please, it doesn't end. So your question to them at the end of their timeout is, are you ready to talk about the fact that you hit your sister, the fact that you screamed at mommy? Whatever it is, and their answer should be yes, ma'am, or yes. If they're not in a place where they can engage you in that conversation, it sounds like you need a little more time. I'm going to give you some more time. Again, I don't want to be discouraging, but y'all, these are long interactions sometimes. But the beauty is if you really dig in and have those longer interactions on the front end, it creates so much more freedom for you later because the kids, they don't know anything different. They don't have any different expectation. We also used a lot of natural consequences. These are great for addressing those kind of foolish behaviors, right? You're 2, you're 3, you put on their jacket, they rip it off. You know what? You can turn that into a battle. You're going to wear that jacket. You're going to leave. We're going to get out of here. Or you can say, can you pick your jacket up off the floor? No. All right, let's get in the car and leave the jacket at home. They're going to be cold. And you can say, oh my goodness, this is why mommy wanted you to have a jacket. I'm so sorry you don't have it today. You're just going to have to be cold and they're going to be fine, right? Same with food. if they don't want to eat their dinner and they say, I don't want to eat this, you say, that's great. Just know you're not going to get anything else till breakfast. I hope that you know that you might feel hungry, and that's going to be okay for you because we have so much food. God has provided us with all we need, and there'll be food for you in the morning. There are certain battles you don't have to fight. Eating, sleeping, and eliminating, right? That's what Dr. Denmark, I think, said. So we just don't really fight over those things because, again, you're going to have so many things you can fight over. Let's just release the ones that we don't have to. The other thing I'll say from kind of a practical standpoint, and then we want you guys to have time to ask questions, is what kind of runway can you give your kid? So, again, we spanked, but and you'll know when it's time to start really addressing those issues. But for probably 6 or 8 months before we spanked our kid, we had kind of a runway, all right? So you want to do something, I'm going to look you in the eye and I'm going to say, you can't do that. Or actually, we'll take it even a step back. I'm going to say, hey, where are your eyes? I'll show me your eyes. Okay. And then say, can you look at my eyes and make sure they're actually looking at your eyes? And then you say, you just touched the stove and that's hot and that's a no, that's dangerous. Or you just screamed at mommy or hit your brother and sister. And then again, I'm doing this over and over. I pick them up and the entire way I'm walking them to the brown chair, you disobeyed mommy. You did something that was not okay, and we're going to have to address that with some discipline. We're going to go to the brown chair, and then I'm sitting them on the brown chair. I need you to wait here, and I'll be back in a minute, and then I'm leaving. And we're doing that for a period of weeks and weeks and weeks. And then we get to the point where I can say, all right, look at my eyes. You disobeyed. I need you to go to the brown chair. And they can go themselves because they understand where it is. So you have kind of a pattern set for them that they're not going, well, what does that even mean? And I loved look at my eyes because then you know they're listening. We also utilized questions as much as we could. Not go to the brown chair, but can you go to the brown chair for me, please? And sometimes I would try when they were doing something great, be like, hey, can you go to the brown chair for me, please? Yes, ma'am. And they get this look and then they go. And then I bring a piece of candy. And I'd be like, I saw you share your toy with your brother and I just wanted to give you a treat. I am so proud of you. Oh, okay. Again, it's all about that training. So they don't learn like, oh, I'm going to go to the brown chair and I get hit multiple times. I forgot kids on the brown chair. They still talk about it. One kid is like, remember that time you forgot me on the brown chair for an hour? I'm like, oh, yes, I do. I'm so sorry. I apologize. But my point is anything you can walk back, anything you can bring back, and anything you can scaffold with questions too, from the simplest thing, do you want your kid to get their own shoes and get in the car? Okay, let's start with when you're not in a hurry and you've got a little time. Hey, do you know where your shoes are? I bet I can find your shoes before you can. No, you can't. I'll find them for, you know, and then they run, they get them. You're like, oh, great, you got your shoes. Do you think you could put them on your own feet? Yeah, okay. Well, let me time you. See how long it takes you to put them on your own feet. And next thing you know, you're in a situation where you can say, can you please get your shoes and put them on your feet? And they're like, yes, I can do that. And then you don't have to do it, right? So anything you can do to kind of walk back those practical, tangible things, and anything you can do when you are dealing with discipline to say, okay, how am I going to engage this? Like, is this something, is this a moment where I just want to teach? Or is this a moment where I want to say, like, it is never going to be okay for you to speak to me that way? And as our kids got older, as they aged out of spanking, we did apple cider vinegar in their mouth if they spoke disrespectfully. One time we didn't have any apple cider vinegar, and my husband did liquid smoke. And my daughter was like, this is awful. He's like, it's not that bad. So he took a whole spoonful, and he was like, oh, this is so bad. They're both standing there, both like, oh, this is so bad. This is so bad. Our daughter's like, I will never say anything disrespectful again. My husband's like, I will never make you do liquid smoke again. I'm so sorry. He was like a campfire for days. But the things that you want to address, again, be creative. Find ways, hopefully not liquid smoke, but find ways to just kind of bring it back to like, okay, the heart here is that when you speak to me disrespectfully, that hurts me, but it also hurts the Lord, and it's going to hurt you in your life. Yes. So this is a good tool, a good thing to bring back, just kind of to help them see the big picture. So that was all I had.
I think for them to see that the heart that you have for them in disciplining them and in teaching and training them is for their good. You want them to be able to function and to be, a grown-up one day that goes out and lives on their own and obeys God on their own. And so it's your job. God has given you this responsibility mm-hmm. to help them learn how to live in this world. I think that's a really good thing. I want to address the truthfulness thing because there was a thing that Brad's mom said to me. I don't even know if it's biblical, but we did it, and I thought it was brilliant. And from her, not because of me. And I don't know what you would think about it, so it's going to be kind of interesting. But we always told our kids that being truthful was the most important thing for them, that God hated a lying tongue. Brad made him memorize that proverb that talked about the seven things the Lord hates, and the lying tongue was one of them, and just the importance of truth-telling. And then we said to them, when we ask you a question, and if you tell us the truth, no matter what you've done, you're going to get a hug. Because they learn. A lot of times the reason they lie is because they're afraid of getting in trouble.
Yeah.
So did you eat the toothpaste? Well, if I say yes, I'm going to get in trouble. If I say no, there's a chance I won't get in trouble. So they're trying to stay out of trouble. They're trying to not make you angry. So they say yes. You say, give me a hug. You told the truth. Then you deal with what they did. But we never dealt, like if they lied, they got a bare bottom spanking. That's the only thing we bare bottom spanked for. But if they told the truth, they had to do 3 jumping jacks. Or they had to run in place for 30 seconds. Or you have to have a consequence because that was wrong to do that. But let's do 3 jumping jacks, and then that's our consequence. And so they learn real quickly. Telling the truth leads to not being punished, but lying is a much bigger mm-hmm. punishment because God hates a lying tongue. Mm-hmm. And we've got to drive that out because that is really a root of a lot more sin. So take it or leave it, but that's what we did, and it really worked, I think. I think our kids learned, okay, they had a decision. You could see the wheels turning. But they learned, I won't get in trouble if I tell the truth. And that seemed to help.
Mm-hmm. Question?
This is kind of in the same vein then. Did you decide these are the things that we spank for? Mm-hmm. And they were certain offenses like dishonesty or abortees or what?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that was my experience in memory was that mm-hmm. those were the big ones. And I would say my kids the same. It was mostly, we use those 4 D's with them too. We didn't spank for potty training. We didn't spank for food issues. We didn't spank for, silliness, but yeah, that defiance and dishonesty.
Yeah. Those were our big ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about like screaming in your face? Hmm. Like I have a 2-year-old, he'll just like, would you consider that disrespect or defiance or just, he's very intuitive, mm-hmm. He doesn't drop stuff on the floor because he already knows. He can say he's sad, he's happy, he knows a lot, and he understands. So I'm trying to figure out the balance of boundaries for him. Hmm. Is that defiance and just screaming at the top of his lung, not for any in particular, but is like kind of why is he doing it? What's the root of it? Is it, I asked him not to and he's still doing it.
Mm-hmm. I think I would step it back like she was talking because he's only 2 and I would try training him in that, and maybe say, okay, you're screaming. So let's have a few seconds that you can scream and then talk to mommy about why you like to scream and what, and get him to talk to you about it. And so that you can understand maybe why he's doing it. Maybe he's feeling like he isn't getting enough attention. And so that's a way to get your attention, positive or negative. Maybe he's feeling like I like the sound of my voice. I like to scream. It feels good when I scream. Mm-hmm. It's a release for me, and try to figure out what's going on. And try to really watch and pay attention. Is he using it at times where he's not getting enough attention? Or is he using it just because he's excited about something and he just lets it out with a scream? Try to get under it a little bit. I think that's what I would say. I don't know about it.
So, at what point then, do you have an example of
Yes. I mean, I think at two, they're going to hit. That's going to be a big just they're angry. And so it just comes out their body in that way. With the screaming, I think if he's a super intuitive kid, that's where really studying him, because sometimes it may be disrespect and sometimes it just may be excitement or something else. So just having a consistent response when that happens, if you're home at least, it'd be more tricky when you're out, but like, oh my goodness, it feels like you need a minute to scream. Here's the place that is appropriate for you to do that. My face is not an appropriate place to do that. Like these are big feelings and I want you to feel the freedom to feel them. Let me show you where and how that's appropriate. And kind of coming at it from that angle of like, oh, wow. Okay. You got something to say there. I mean, we have one that struggles a lot with anger and we have a punching bag in our basement. And I say on a semi-regular basis, sounds like you need a minute in the basement. I'm going to let you go down there and just punch work it. Some of that out. And then we can have a conversation. So kind of giving him that option of like, again, you're teaching him like this is an appropriate place to have this response or this need to scream. And my face isn't. And you can even say like, I've asked you not to scream in my face and it keeps happening. So we're kind of headed towards disobedience here. All right. So you need to understand the next time you scream in my face, I'm going to do this. And then the next time you're going to get a spanking or whatever it is. But y'all, when you say, I'm going to do this, you got to do it. So you just got to be careful that you don't like, all right, well, first time you're going to do this, second time you're going to do this, and then it's gone. We were talking about a consequence for my 17-year-old yesterday, my husband and I. And we're like back and forth. And he goes, I don't want to manage that. I said, well, I don't want to manage that either. Mm-hmm. So we finally came up with one that was like, oh, we're not going to have to manage that. There's our consequence. That's it. So setting yourself up for success too, because especially as you have more and more and they're younger, what number of times this and this last time I said it would be this, and simplify as much as you can.
And make the consequences work for you. I always made my kids clean something.
Yeah.
Why not, y'all?
It's a great one. If they're angry,
it's teaching them a great skill and it's helpful to me and it's a good little consequence. It's a good little punishment. Go scrub the toilet. Knock yourself out. You got to teach them how to do it, but then it's like, oh gosh, looks like it's time for the toilet to get clean. Yeah.
No. One more question concerning your using question.
Okay.
So I had heard from a pediatric psychotherapist.
Oh gosh.
Only use questions for them if they can have a response. You know, like if you're saying, can you go to that chair for me? If they say no, like so that they have a voice.
Yes.
Basically. So if they say yes, then they go. And if they say no, you know, so I try not to use questions with my kid if I'm not okay with a no answer.
Yes. But sometimes.
I was wondering.
Yes.
With your example, like how you saw that work, did you have kids that were like, no, I'm not going to that chair?
100%. And there were times I had to let that go. And then there were times I had to say, oh, you know what? I just asked a question. And what I meant was, you got to go get your shoes. I'm so sorry. It's not a choice. So, but sometimes that fleshed it out for me. Like I didn't realize that it really needed to be done or I really cared. Or sometimes it was like, hey, it's your job to do this right now. Can you do this? No. Okay. Well, that's fine. But it's going to have to be done some point today or whatever it is, you know, but I would say, yeah, I'd always be okay with the no. That's, you got to teach them that. Like you have a no, it has power and I'm going to respect it.
Well, I'll tell you another thing that I've observed a lot, and that is when parents say, you need to do that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Don't ask them if it's okay. You just told them to do something. It's okay. And we're looking for validation in that. I mean, that's essentially what that is. Is that okay with you?
Because for me, I realized what I was asking is, do you understand? And so I started saying, oh, wait, do you understand?
Right.
Because it's not, is this going to be okay with you? I want you to confirm that you're actually following what I'm telling you. So,
but sometimes this isn't okay with you. So, yeah.
One of the things to point out with what you were saying too is what I did in my classroom, because there's a lot of times where you want that disciplinary thing and they do say no, then I would remove their center time because it is centered like every day. So if they weren't doing something and I wanted them to go to like the calming corner and they were like, nope. And I'm like, then you're not going to your center. So you either go to the calming corner or you're not going to your center. And then sometimes they literally just walked around the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
I got very lucky, very rarely, like nothing really ever, like they didn't do anything they weren't supposed to do because they, at that point, were given the choice to either go where they, or I wanted them to go, or they were choosing a consequence removal of the, for something like that. So then they would just wander around the classroom. I got so lucky that nothing ever happened. But it was like they just had that kind of inside where they knew, okay, if I'm not going to my center and I'm not going to the chair, what else am I going to do? And they just kind of wandered around. So then that might be something that's helpful for him, especially at that young age, where it's like, no, you're not going to do this. Well, if you don't do this, then this is your other choice. So then you give them the power to choose,
mm-hmm.
and it's still within your control, but they still get the voice to say no.
That's really good. And logical consequences are a great form of discipline. You know, you don't always have to be spanking all day long. A logical consequence. If mm-hmm. if you throw your food on the floor, food's going to go away.
Mm-hmm. You're done eating. Choices are great, too. You know, you say, can you go get your shoes? No. Okay. Well, you can either go get your shoes or your jacket. What would you rather do right now? I mean, that works great with teenagers, too. Just FYI. Here are your options. You have complete control over these two options. It's great.
Oh, mercy.
Any other questions?
I don't know. Should we? I don't know.
You mentioned with the hitting. I like when you said, my face is not an appropriate place to scream or whatever. How would you handle that with the two-year-old hitting? Like, what would you say to them if they were, like, hitting their sibling?
Yeah. We call that angry hands. So I would say, oh, my goodness, you're feeling so much anger that it came out in your hands. And anger is normal. And anger is not bad. And those feelings are not going away. I had this conversation with my 11-year-old yesterday. Your anger is not going away. So we've got to figure out what to do with it because hitting is not okay. So there's a boundary there, right? Between you and somebody else. So that's kind of how I would come at it. Even before you start spanking, like, oh, hey, you're feeling angry. And they're not ready yet too. But as they get a little older, anger has a kissing cousin and usually comes second. So who's anger's cousin that was there that you missed? Before, so like there's something happens and then you're going to anger. Like, can we figure out what's before that so that you are understanding a little bit? Because that those big giant feelings are not going away. So how can we deal with them in ways that are appropriate and healthy for you, but also the people around you? I mean, you got to figure out what to do with that. And I want to hit things sometimes. I tell all my kids a story about how I got so angry one day. It was nap time. I had a diaper full of pee that was like the fifth diaper of pee I had changed. I don't know what she had to drink. And I just was at the top of the stairs and I just threw the diaper down the stairs and it exploded everywhere. And I was like, then I was crying for like the 2 hours where you're finding the little gel beads that are pee soaked all over my den. And everyone was in the bed at that point. Everyone was taking a nap that day. But I was like, I spent 2 hours on my knees like, Lord, I really blew it. Now I'm having to pee soaked gel beads all over my den. But like, I mean, it's not going away.
Would you let them like hit something appropriate? Like, I mean, he's too young to go in the basement and go to a punching bag.
Right. Maybe not at two.
I'm like, do I give him a pelvic? Like, he has a little calming corner. Like you mentioned, we have a moment where we try to regain. But I want to work through that with him because he's two.
Yes.
But sometimes, I mean, he doesn't hit me, so we just practice. You know, we call him soft hands.
Yeah.
So we try to encourage what we want to see. But I'm just, and then I'm like, he has no desire to hit me, so then I get the blank stare like, oh, I don't get it. What's the problem?
Mm-hmm.
Do I distance him from his sister? I mean, because his sister's not the problem. Do I distance him? I just try to tell him, like, we can't play with toys right now until you're able to use soft hands.
Yeah.
Are you able to use gentle hands with your sister and your toys? And then you can come back.
That sounds like, yeah, it sounds like you're doing great. It's the same if they're breaking a toy, like if they're ramming a toy that's not meant, like this toy wasn't made to be banged against the wall. So like we need to put it away. Oh, no. Man, I tell you. Yeah, this sounds like you're handling it really well. I think it's just that. It's just the feelings aren't going away. So what are you going to do with them?
But also what's provoking, what's making him want to hit? You know,
right.
what is that anger? Or whatever, he may not feel angry. It may just feel good to hit her, you know? Boys are very physical. They're very kinesthetic. They love to hit and tumble. And that just might be one way he's even showing affection. If you can figure out why he's doing it and just tell him that's not.
Your sister doesn't think that's affectionate. And neither will your future spouse. So Let's deal with that. I don't know what time. I think she said.
You've got like 2 minutes.
Oh, okay. Gosh. Okay.
Any other questions?
We have another question for y'all at your table.
Oh. Yeah.
You know what was fun when we just met to talk about it the first time? It was our conversation. She's laughing. But I love that conversation. What are you laughing at?
I'm just laughing. It was a little like nailing Jell-O to the wall. We met three times. And every time she's like, I think we should do that. I'm like, Mom, we gotta narrow it in here.
I tend to be a little spontaneous.
We gotta land the plane. So we may be a few decades away from a book if history repeats itself.
We're a little different.
Thank you for that encouragement, though. There are some excellent books not written by me that I highly recommend. I will say, in the 2 minutes we have left, I know we talked about kind of addressing some of the cultural stuff. These two books are relatively new, and they are both excellent. It's Mama Bear Apologetics. So this speaks to emotionalism and kind of all of the cultural things that you just hear, the mantras, right? And you're like, wait, that's not necessarily biblical, but this is very tangible, practical, how to address those things with your kids. And then they just released one on sexuality and gender too. And y'all, they talk about a movie in here I watched with my kids. I didn't even realize the girl was gay. I'm like, oh, she had a girlfriend at the end. I missed it. I'm like, maybe the girls missed it too. Who knows? But it's Daniel Tiger, it's Arthur. There's so much happening, an assault for your kids on, in those cartoons and things that you may not even be aware of. So, but this is great practical ideas of just how you can have conversations with your kids, because not having a conversation is not going to be good. These are both excellent. So highly, highly recommend those.
Didn't I tell you about another book? I can't remember what it was. I don't know. I had another book that was along that line, too, that I don't know what it was.
If you don't know, I don't know. But
thank y'all.
That was so fun.